The Demolished Man by Alfred Bester, read by Joe Dunlop.
Chapter 1.
Explosion. Concussion. The vault doors burst open. And deep inside, the money is racked, ready for pillage, rapine, loot. Who's that? Who's inside the vault? Oh, God. The man with no face. Looking. Looming. Silent. Horrible. Run. Run! Run, or I'll miss the parish pneumatic. And that exquisite girl with her flower face and figure of passion. It's time if I run. That isn't the guard before the gate. Who cries? The man with no face. Looking. Looming. Silent. Don't scream. Stop screaming. So I'm not screaming. I'm singing on a stage of sparkling marble while the music soars and the lights burn. But there's no one out there in the amphitheater. A great shadowed pit. Empty. Except for one spectator. Silent, staring, looming. The man with no face! And this time, his scream had sound. Ben Reich awoke. He lay quietly in the hydropathic bed, while his heart shuddered, and his eyes focused at random on objects in the room, simulating a calm he could not feel. The walls of green jade, the nightlight in the porcelain mandarin, whose head nodded interminably if you touched him, the multi-clock that radiated the time of 3 planets and 6 satellites, the bed itself, a crystal pool flowing with carbonated glycerin at 99.9 Fahrenheit. The door opened softly and Jonas appeared in the gloom, a shadow in puce sleeping suit, a shade with the face of a horse and the bearing of an undertaker.
Again?
Reich asked.
Yes, Mr. Reich.
Loud?
Very loud, sir. And terrified.
God damn your jackass ears, Reich growled. I'm never afraid.
No, sir.
Get out.
Yes, sir. Good night, sir.
Jonas stepped back and closed the door. Reich shouted, Jonas! The valet reappeared.
Sorry, Jonas. Quite all right, sir. It isn't all right.
Reich charmed him with a smile. I'm treating you like a relative. I don't pay enough for the privilege.
Oh, no, sir.
Next time I yell at you, yell right back. Why should I have all the fun?
Oh, Mr. Reich,
do that and you get a raise. That smile again. That's all, Jonas. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
The valet withdrew. Reich arose from the bed and toweled himself before the cheval mirror, practicing the smile.
Make your enemies by choice, he muttered, not by accident.
He stared at the reflection, the heavy shoulders, narrow flanks, long corded legs, the sleek head with wide eyes, chiseled nose, small sensitive mouth, scarred by implacability.
Why? He asked. I wouldn't change looks with the devil. I wouldn't change places with God. Why the screaming?
He put on a gown and glanced at the clock, unaware that he was noting the time panorama of the solar system with an unconscious skill that would have baffled his ancestors. The dials read A.D. 2301. Venus, Earth, Mars. Venus, mean solar day 22, noon plus 09. Earth, February 15th, 0205 Greenwich. Mars, due December 35, 2220 Central Syrtis. Moon, 10, 2D, 3H, 1D, 1H, Ganymede, 6D, 8H, Eclipse, Callisto, 13D, 12H, Titan, 15D, 3H, Transit, Triton, 4D, 9H. Night, noon, summer, winter. Without bothering to think, Wright could have rattled off the time and season for any meridian of any body in the solar system. Here in New York, it was a bitter winter morning after a bitter night of dreaming. He would give himself a few minutes of analysis with the Esper psychiatrist he retained. The screaming had to stop. "E for Esper," he muttered. "Esper for extrasensory perception, for telepaths, mind readers, brain peepers. You think a mind-reading doctor could stop this screaming? You think an Esper M.D. would earn his money and peep inside your head and stop this screaming? Those damn mind-readers are supposed to be the greatest advance since Homo sapiens evolved. E for evolution, bastards! E for exploitation!" He yanked open the door, shaking with fury. He stepped down the corridor, clacking his sandals sharply on the silver floor. Kick-tack, 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 kick-tack. Indifferent to the slumber of his house staff, unaware that this early morning skeletal clack awakened 12 hearts to hatred and dread. He thrust open the door of his analyst's suite, entered, and at once lay down on the couch. Carson Breen, Esper medical doctor, too, was already awake and ready for him. As Reich's staff analyst, he slept with the nurse's sleep, in which he remained en rapport with his patient and could only be awakened by his needs. That one scream had been enough for Breen. Now he was seated alongside the couch, elegant in embroidered gown. His job paid 20,000 credits a year, and sharply alert. His employer was generous but demanding. "Go ahead, Mr. Reich."
"The man with no face again,"
Reich growled.
"Nightmares? You lousy bloodsucker. Peep me and find out." "No. Sorry. Childish of me. Yeah, it's nightmares again. I was trying to rob a bank. Then I was trying to catch a train. Then someone was singing. Me, I think. I'm trying to give you the picture as best I can. I don't think I'm leaving anything out." There was a long pause. Finally, Reich blurted,
"Well, you keep anything?"
"You persist that you cannot identify the man with no face, Mr. Reich?"
"How can I? I never see it. All I know is..."
"I think you can. You simply will not."
"Listen," Reich burst out in guilty rage. "I pay you 20,000. If the best you can do is make idiotic statements..."
"Do you mean, Mr. Reich? Or is it simply a part of the general anxiety syndrome?"
"There's no anxiety," Reich shouted. "I'm not afraid. I'm never..."
He stopped himself, realizing the inutility of ranting while the deaf mind of the peeper searched underneath his overturning words.
"You're wrong anyway," he said sulkily. "I don't know who it is. It's a man with no face, that's all."
"You've been rejecting the essential points, Mr. Reich. You must be made to see them. We'll try a little free association. Without words, please. Just think. Robbery, jewels, watches, diamonds, stocks, bonds, sovereigns, counterfeiting, cash, bullion, dort.
What was that last again? Slip of the mind. Meant to think Bort. Uncut gemstones. It was not a slip. It was a significant correction, or rather alteration. Let's continue. Pneumatic. Long. Car. Apartments. Air. Conditioned. That doesn't make sense. It does, Mr. Reich. A phallic pun. Read air, H-E-I-R, for air, A-I-R, and you'll see it. Continue, please. You peepers are too damn smart. Let's see. Pneumatic, train, underground, compressed, air, ultrasonic speed. We transport you into transport. Slogan of the, what the devil's the name of that company? Can't remember. Where did the notion come from anyway? From the pre-conscious, Mr. Reich. One more trial and you begin to understand. Amphitheater. Seats. Pits. Balcony. Boxes. Stalls. Horse stalls. Martian horses. Martian pampas. And there you have it, Mr. Reich. Mars. In the past 6 months, you've had 97 nightmares about the man with no face. He's been your constant enemy, frustrator, and inspirer of terror and dreams that contain three common denominators. Finance, transportation, and Mars. Over and over again. The man with no face and finance, transportation, and Mars. That doesn't mean anything to me. It must mean something, Mr. Reich. You must be able to identify this terrifying figure. Why else would you attempt to escape by rejecting his face?
Not rejecting anything.
I offer as further clues the altered word DART and the forgotten name of the company that coined the slogan, "We transport you into..."
I tell you, I don't know who it is.
Reich rose abruptly from the couch.
Your clues don't help. I can't make any identification.
The man with no face does not fill you with fear because he's faceless. You know who he is. You hate him and fear him. But you know who he is.
You're the peeper, you tell me.
There's a limit to my ability, Mr. Reich. I can read your mind no deeper without help.
What do you mean, help? You're the best EMD I could hire. If
you're neither thinking nor meaning that, Mr. Reich. You deliberately hired a second-class Esper in order to protect yourself in such an emergency. Now you're paying the price of your caution. If you want the screaming to stop, you'll have to consult one of the first-class men, say Augustus Tate, or Gart, or Samuel Atkins.
I'll think about it,
Reich muttered and turned to go. As he opened the door, Breen called, "By the way, we transport you into transports is the slogan of the de Courtney cartel. Does that tie with the alteration of Bort to Dort? Think it over."
A man with no face.
Without staggering, Reich slammed the door across the path from his mind to Breen, and then lurched down the corridor towards his own suite. A wave of savage hatred burst over him.
He's right. It's de Courtney who's giving me the screams. Not because I'm afraid of him. I'm afraid of myself. Known all along, known it deep down inside, knowing that once I faced it, I'd have to kill that de Courtney bastard. It's no face, because it's the face of murder.
Fully dressed and in his wrong mind, Reich stormed out of his apartment and descended to the street, where a monarch jumper picked him up and carried him in one graceful hop to the giant tower that housed the hundreds of floors and thousands of employees of Monarch's New York office. Monarch Tower was the central nervous system
of an incredibly vast corporation, a pyramid of transportation, communication, heavy industry, manufacture, sales distribution, research, exploration, importation. Monarch Utilities and Resources Incorporated, bought and sold, traded and gave, made and destroyed. Its pattern of subsidiaries and holding companies was so complex that it demanded the full-time services of a second-class Esper accountant to trace the labyrinthine flow of its finances. Reich entered his office, followed by his chief, Esper III secretary, and her staff, bearing the litter of the morning's work.
"Dump it in jet," he growled.
They deposited the papers and recording crystals on his desk and departed hastily, but without rancor. They were accustomed to his rages. Reich seated himself behind his desk, trembling with the fury that was already goring into Courtney. Finally he muttered,
"I'll give the bastard one more chance."
He unlocked his desk, opened the drawer safe, and withdrew the executive's code book, restricted to the executive heads of the firms listed, quadruple A1 by Lloyd's. He found most of the material he required in the middle pages of the book. QQBA equals partnership. RRCB equals both our. SSDC equals both your. TTED equals merger. UUVE equals interests. VVGF equals information. WWHG equals accept offer. XXIH equals generally known. YYJI equals suggest. ZZKJ equals confidential. AALK equals equal. BBML equals contract. Marking his place in the code book, Reich flipped the V-phone on and said to the image of the interoffice operator,
"Get me code."
The screen dazzled and cut to a smoky room cluttered with books and coils of tape. A bleached man in a faded shirt glanced at the screen, then leaped to attention.
"Yes, Mr. Reich. Morning, Hassop. You look like you need a vacation.
Make your enemies by choice.
Take a week at Spaceland. Monarch expense."
"Thank you, Mr. Reich. Thank you very much."
"This one's confidential. Decree to Courtney. Send,
Reich consulted the code book.
Send YYJI, TTED, RRCB, UUVE, AALK, QQBA. Get the answer to me like rockets, right?"
"Right, Mr. Reich. I'll jet."
Reich cut off the phone and glanced at the message. "Suggest merger both our interests. Equal partnership." He jabbed his hand once into the pile of papers and crystals on his desk, picked up a crystal, and dropped it into the playback. His chief secretary's voice said, "Monarch gross off 2.1134%. The Courtney gross up 2.1130%.
"God damn him,"
Reich growled.
"Out of my pocket into his."
He snapped off the playback and arose in an agony of impatience. It would take hours for the reply to come. His whole life hung on De Courtney's reply. He left his office and began to roam through the floors and departments of Monarch Tower, pretending the remorseless personal supervision he usually exercised. His Esper secretary unobtrusively accompanied him like a trained dog.
"Trained bitch," Reich thought.
Then aloud, "I'm sorry, did you peep that?"
"Quite all right, Mr. Reich, I understand."
"Do you? I don't. Damn De Courtney."
In personnel, they were testing, checking, and screening the usual mass of job applicants. Clerks, craftsmen, specialists, middle-bracket executives, top-echelon experts. All of the preliminary elimination was done with standardized tests and interviews, and never to the satisfaction of Monarch's Esper personnel chief, who was stalking through the floor in an icy rage when Reich entered. The fact that Reich's secretary had sent an advance telepathic announcement of the visit made no difference to him. "I've allotted 10 minutes per applicant for my final screening interview," the chief was snapping to an assistant. 6 per hour, 48 per day. Unless my percentage of final rejections drop below 35, I'm wasting my time, which means you are wasting Monarch's time. I am not employed by Monarch to screen out the obviously unsuitable. That is your work. See to it." He turned to Reich and nodded pedantically. "Good morning, Mr. Reich."
"Morning.
Trouble?" "Nothing that cannot be handled once this staff understands that extrasensory perception is not a miracle, but a skill subject to wage hour limitations. What's your decision on Blahn, Mr. Reich?" "Secretary, he hasn't read your memo yet." "May I point out, young woman, that unless I am used with maximum efficiency, I am wasted. The Blahn memo has been on Mr. Reich's desk for 3 days.
"Who the hell's Blahn?"
Reich asked. First, the background, Mr. Reich. There are approximately 100,000 third-class Espers in the Esper Guild. An Esper 3 can peep the conscious level of a mind, can discover what a subject is thinking at the moment of thought. A third is the lowest class of telepath. Most of Monarch's security positions are held by thirds. We employ over 500. He knows all this. Everyone knows. Get to the point, long wind. Permit me, if I may, to arrive at the point in my own way. Next, there are approximately 10,000 second-class Espers in the Guild," the personnel chief continued frostily. "They are experts, like myself, who can penetrate beneath the conscious level of the mind to the pre-conscious. Most seconds are in the professional class. Physicians, lawyers, engineers, educators, economists, architects, and so on.
And you all cost a fortune,"
Reich growled. "Why not? We have unique service to sell. Monarch appreciates the fact. Monarch employs over 100 seconds at present."
"Will you get to the point?"
"Finally, there are less than 1,000 first-class Espers in the Guild. The firsts are capable of deep peeping through the conscious and pre-conscious layers down to the unconscious, the lowest levels of the mind, primordial basic desires, and so forth. Those, of course, hold premium positions, education, specialized medical services, analysts like Tate, Gart, Atkins, Mazel, criminologists like Lincoln Powell of the psychotic division, political analysts, state negotiators, special cabinet advisors, and so on. Thus far, Monarch Utilities has never had occasion to hire a first."
"And?"
Reich muttered. "The occasion has arisen, Mr. Reich, and I believe Blahn may be available. Briefly," it says here, "briefly, Mr. Reich, Monarch is hiring so many Espers that I have suggested we set up a special Esper personnel department, headed by a first, like Blahn, devote himself exclusively to interviewing telepaths."
"He's wondering why you can't handle it."
"I have given you the background to explain why I cannot handle the job, Mr. Reich. I'm a second-class Esper. I can telepath normal applicants rapidly and efficiently, but I cannot handle other Espers with the same speed and economy. All Espers are accustomed to using mind blocks of varying effectiveness depending on their rating. It would take me 1 hour per third for an efficient screening interview. It would take me 2 hours per second. I could not possibly peep through the mind block of a first. We must hire a first like Blahn for this work. The cost will be enormous, of course, but the necessity is urgent."
"What's so urgent?"
Reich said.
"For heaven's sake, don't give him that picture. That isn't diversion. He's waving a red flag. He's sore enough now." "I have my job to do, madam," the chief thought.
To Reich, the chief said, "The fact is, sir, we're not hiring the best Espers. The de Courtney cartel has been taking the cream of the Espers away from us.
over and over again. Through lack of proper facilities, we have been mousetrapped by de Courtney into bidding for inferior people, while de Courtney has quietly appropriated the best.
Damn you!
Reich shouted. Damn de Courtney! All right, set it up, and tell this blonde to start mousetrapping de Courtney. You'd better start, too!
Reich tore out of personnel and over to Sale City. The same unpleasant information was waiting for him. Monarch Utilities and Resources was losing the gut fight with the de Courtney cartel. It was losing the fight in every sector city. Advertising, engineering, research, public relations. There was no escaping the certainty of defeat. Reich knew his back was to the wall. He returned to his own office and paced in a fury for 5 minutes.
It's no use, he muttered. I know I'll have to kill him. He won't accept merger. Why should he? He's licked me and he knows it. I'll have to kill him, and I need help. Peeper help.
He flicked on the V-phone and told the operator,
Recreation.
A sparkling lounge appeared on the screen, decorated in chrome and enamel, equipped with game tables and a bar dispenser. It appeared to be and was used as a recreation center. It was, in fact, headquarters of Monarch's powerful espionage division. The recreation director, a bearded scholar named West, looked up from a chess problem, then rose to attention.
Good morning, Mr. Reich.
Warned by the formal Mr., Reich said,
Good morning, Mr. West. Just a routine check. Paternalism, you know. How's amusement these days?
Modulated, Mr. Reich. However, I must complain, sir, I think there's entirely too much gambling going on. West stalled in a fussy voice until two bona fide monarch clerks innocently finished their drinks and departed. Then he relaxed and slumped into his chair.
All right, Ben, shoot. Has Hassa broken the confidential code yet, Ellery?
The peeper shook his head.
Trying?
West smiled and nodded.
Where's de Courtney?
En route to Terra, aboard the Astra.
Know his plans, where he'll be staying?
No. Want to check?
I don't know. It depends.
Depends on what? West glanced at him curiously.
I wish the telepathic pattern could be transmitted by phone, Ben. I'd like to know what you're thinking at.
Reich smiled grimly.
Thank God for the phone. At least we got that protection from mind readers. What's your attitude on crime, Ellery?
Typical.
Of anybody?
Of the Guild. The Guild doesn't like it, Ben.
So what's so hot about the Esper Guild? You know the value of money, success. Why don't you clever up? Why do you let the Guild do your thinking?
You don't understand. We're born in the Guild. We live with the Guild. We die in the Guild. We've the right to elect Guild officers, and that's all. The Guild runs our professional lives. It trains us, grades us, sets ethical standards, and sees that we stick to them. It protects us by protecting the layman, the same as medical associations. We have the equivalent of the Hippocratic Oath. It's called the Esper Pledge. God help any of us if we break it. As I judge you're suggesting I should.
Maybe I am, Reich said intently. Maybe I'm hinting it could be worth your while to break the Peeper Pledge. Maybe I'm thinking in terms of money, more than you or any second-class Peeper ever sees in a lifetime.
Forget it, Ben. Not interested.
So you bust your pledge. What happens?
We're ostracized.
That's all? Is that so awful? With a fortune in your pocket? Smart peepers have broken with the Guild before. They've been ostracized, so what? Clever up, Ellery.
West smiled wryly. You wouldn't understand, Ben.
Make me understand.
Those ousted peepers you mentioned, like Jerry Church, they weren't so smart. It's like this, West considered. Before surgery really got started, there used to be a handicapped group called deaf mutes.
No hear, no talk.
That said, they communicated by a manual sign language. That meant they couldn't communicate with anybody but deaf mutes. Understand? They had to live in their own community, or they couldn't live at all. A man goes crazy if he can't talk to friends.
So?
Some of them started a racket. They'd tax the more successful deaf mutes for weekly handouts. If the victim refused to pay, they'd ostracize him. The victim always paid. It was a choice of paying or living in solitary until he went mad.
You mean you peepers are like deaf mutes?
No, Ben. You normals are the deaf mutes. If we had to live with you alone, we'd go mad. So leave me alone. If you're nursing something dirty, I don't want to know. West cut off the phone in Reich's face. With a roar of rage, Reich snatched up a gold paperweight and hurled it into the crystal screen. Before the shattered fragments finished flying, he was in the corridor and on his way out of the building.
That is the end of this side. The story continues on the other side of this cassette.